So the formal beginning of the retreat here at IRC involves first introduction to the theme of the retreat and a few words around practicing here. And then taking the precepts, refuges and precepts. It's a little bit of a ritual that is meant to have some profound value for the heart and for the community. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the theme, then Max will do the refuges and precepts. The theme is something that's called the five faculties. There are five capacities that all of us have that we all use all the time in different endeavors of our life, but maybe it's never been identified as these are five as a set that we can call upon in doing this practice we're doing. They're very helpful and supportive, and to call them forth is helpful and support the practice. But also they develop as we do the practice, and they get stronger and stronger as we practice more and more. And recognizing them, knowing what they are, helps them to grow, helps them to support us that they're here. And so they usually call them faculties. And when they become really strong, they're called powers. And sometimes people don't associate Buddhist practice with becoming powerful. The tendency is to associate Buddhist practice with becoming peaceful or accepting or a softie or something. But that might be the case sometimes, but that doesn't mean we also don't grow in inner strength and become somehow on the inside quite strong and have the strength to enter into all kinds of difficult situations that maybe wouldn't before. And so these five faculties are some of the things that can bring us to inner strength and to have that capacity. There's a wonderful story that some of you might know about the Buddha, that before he finally kind of figured out how to get enlightened, he studied with two other meditation teachers of his time, and he was apparently an outstanding student, mastered what they had to teach, and each of them wanted him to become a teacher in their lineage. But he think this was great, but it wasn't really the awakening or liberation he was looking for, so he left. After he left the second one, he was wondering, you know, what to do now, what do I do now? And then he realized that he had these five faculties. And he said, well, since I have these faculties, I have the resources or the ability, the capacity inside to find my own way. And that's when he set forth and then discovered his way to freedom. So these are capacities you will have as well, and to tap into them, to let them come forth, will give you the opportunity to find your way forward in this practice here. And I hope that you learn to appreciate these wonderful things. So the five faculties are confidence, sometimes called faith, but confidence, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, sometimes translated as insight. So the confidence is the beginning of them, if we start at the beginning. And confidence is an affective quality. It's not so much about what you believe. Sometimes when we use the word faith, we focus on what we believe, like the creed that we have faith in. But this is more, it's more like an affective or inner emotional attitude of confidence, of courage, of enthusiasm, some kind of heartfelt, where you want to put your heart, in the sense of faith being what you offer your heartfelt dedication to, where you're willing to place your heart or something, the heart's wish or what makes the heart sing. So it's a kind of uplifting emotional enthusiasm of confidence. Yes, I can do this. This is possible. This is worthwhile. And so to tap into that enthusiasm or that inspiration that is this confidence is a great support for the practice. You'll notice in particular when you don't have it, which is inevitable, it will happen in practice. We go through cycles and phases, and sometimes the confidence dips and you'll feel it's not there. But to recognize that it's a capacity that you have means it's in there. Your ability to do it is in there. And it maybe doesn't require believing in something, because too often when we believe in something, like we believe in, you know, the teachers, or we believe in the teachings, or the Buddha, or we believe in enlightenment even, it's a little bit dangerous to believe in something like that. Inevitably, when you do we do this practice, that kind of gets flushed out after a while, or because it doesn't really make a lot of sense to keep believing in something when you do this mindfulness practice. But it makes a lot of sense to grow in confidence and trust to be here in an awake way, to be here in a free way, to just really show up here in a strong way. And I'm using this gesture of my hands like this because I think that this, for me, represents the inner movement of showing up and waking up with confidence. And that is, with something inside of us kind of opens up. It's like the arms open up, the chest opens up, and we're just here in a very full, alert way, as opposed to caving in or getting tight. So what does it take inside to have the confidence to be able to sit here open, upright, alert, kind of ready for anything? Here we are, present. And you know, what inner stance, what inner feeling, what inner posture can you assume to have that present? That makes it a lot easier than to apply effort and energy to be engaged. And I like, I had to, maybe it's a bit silly to say this, but I kind of like to say that Buddhist practice doesn't work at all unless you do it. So there has to be some effort that goes into it. We have to give ourselves to it. We have to engage in the process of it. And it's a whole art. A lot of the art of practice has to do with discovering what it means to make effort. What kind of effort? It's not just one kind of effort we make, but what's the right amount of effort? Not too much, not too little, not too forceful, not too laid back. You know, there's a whole bunch of ways in which the effort element comes into place. Sometimes it feels like manual labor, the effort that's appropriate, and sometimes it feels effortless. It shifts and changes. And learning the art of following the changing nature, the qualities of effort, and recognizing and knowing how to surf and find your way is part of the art of meditation. And then it really helps to have mindfulness, to have the ability to have some oversight of what's happening, to be able to see clearly, to recognize what's happening, to be able to be in the present moment enough that you can really kind of track what's happening here and track it so that you can do a number of things. One of them so that you can avoid getting too distracted, avoid spinning out in thoughts and preoccupations. And without getting distracted, then the mind will get concentrated. And to have an ability to be focused or composed, that of samadhi, is the fourth faculty. We all have the ability, the capacity for some degree of composure of mind, settledness of mind, concentration of mind. And as we stay more and more in the present moment and see what goes on there, it's easier to settle in and let all the extraneous kind of movements of the mind quiet down. And this concentration factor has a lot to do with quieting the mind, steadying the mind enough so that the field of awareness is not claustrophobic. It's not crowded. A lot of the reason to quiet the mind so it doesn't think so much is so that there's space in awareness to really see other things besides what we're thinking about. And that gives rise to this usually called wisdom, or I like to call it insight, the fifth of the five faculties. And I like to call it insight because it's a capacity to see. Wisdom might sound like, you know, you have some understanding, you read a lot of books, and now you have a lot of wisdom, and just it's portable, all these ideas. But we're not talking about learning ideas. We're talking about being able to actually discern clearly and penetratingly what is actually going on here in our experience? What's the nature of it? How does it unfold? So that we can be wise with it, so we can be discerning, so we can find our way within it and find where the path to freedom is and see where the path to bondage is, that, you know, and to be able to recognize that, and so that we can choose to keep going on the path of freedom with confidence and energy and mindfulness and concentration and learn more wisdom. So that's kind of the theme of the retreat. And we'll take, for the first 5 days, the Dharma talks, each of those, and spend some time exploring it, discussing it with you. And I hope that in the process of doing that, that these talks, something about these talks, maybe not all of them, but some pieces of them, will function as mirrors for you to see something about yourself. That mirror, so you see, recognize your confidence, your capacity for effort, your capacity for mindfulness, your capacity for concentration, and your capacity for wisdom, insight. So here we go on this journey together. Thank you.
So, as Gil mentioned, it is. How's the sound? Is that okay? Yeah, higher, more. Oh, it's good. little more. Feels a little low to me, but if at some point you can't hear me, feel free to just raise your hand, and then we'll do something or speak louder. It's our custom at the beginning of retreat to reflect on our direction, our intention. And the traditional way of doing this is to call to mind these eight streams of blessing, the three refuges and the five precepts. So I wanted to talk about them a little bit. I guess one way into the understanding of Buddha, so the three refuges are Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And one way of understanding these are the Buddha as the historical Buddha, the person who practiced and whose awakening, from whose awakening our practice comes from. And Dharma is sometimes understood as the teaching of the Buddha, the law, the way things are. And then Sangha is the community of practitioners. And so maybe we could say that this understanding of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is a traditional understanding, and it's also a little bit oriented in a way that's external from us. We can also understand these jewels, these refuges, as something that is inside of us. Buddha meaning to awaken, to know, to really see something. this is, you know, one way I think about this is sort of like, it's inside of us, but it's often covered over. You know, it's covered over by all of the ways that we get caught, that we get mesmerized, that we get entranced in our stories, our ideas, our desires, our fears. And, you know, in a time like this on retreat, we're going to be spending a lot of time with our mind. And it's an invitation in a way to come into a different relationship with our thinking and our thoughts. You know, rather than being so quick to believe them and to chase after them and to allow them to create a world for us, we're invited to notice them. Notice a thought as a thought. And it's like, it can be an amazing experience the first time you really follow a thought to its end, and then it's over, it's dissolved. You know? And what felt so substantial and so compelling is just gone. And so what remains, you know, when the thought has dissolved, what remains? You know, this knowing, this, our basic sanity, our basic purity. So sometimes people talk about Buddha this way. And then what we wake up to, what we see, what we know, is the truth of how things are. This is the Dharma. To take refuge in the Dharma means to come back again and again to this body, this breath, this moment, you know, this feeling, this emotion, this pattern of thinking. This is the manifestation of the moment right now. This is how things are. And the little bit of the irony of practice is that for most of us, how things are is what brought us here. You know, there's something that's not, you know, that's hard to be with, that's painful, that's difficult. Even if our life is wonderful, we know somewhere, sometime, the party's going to end, you know. And so what does it mean to be at ease in this world of uncertainty? And so to take refuge in the Dharma means to be willing to open again and again to how things are right now. So this is the Buddha seeing the Dharma. And Sangha is all of us is doing this together. Is that the field of blessing that opens up when we each make this intention to align ourselves with the source of wisdom and compassion and goodness. And often we don't see our own light, you know, but we can see other people's light. And other people can see our light. So it's so supportive to be with friends, with fellow travelers. So this is, you know, this is Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And as we enter into this practice, we come to see that how we are in the world and how we are with each other can either support this practice of waking up, or it can hinder this clear seeing. And so this is the territory of what are called the five ethical precepts. Some of us were at a talk at Stanford last week, and the teacher was saying something like, we need to rebrand, he's a monk, and he was saying, we need to rebrand the five precepts as something like mindfulness-based behavioral therapy or something. You know, if I stop hurting people and stealing and lying, I'll feel better. You know, it's like a great therapy. And, you know, what would this world be like if we related to each other this way, with kindness, with respect? So these precepts are understood to be great protections. They protect ourselves from harming ourselves, harming others, and it protects others. And there is this very interesting relationship between ethics and meditation. You know, it's like, I think many of us come to practice through the door of meditation. We're interested in meditating, we're interested in understanding our minds and maybe suffering less. And often as we explore this path, we begin to see that the ethical dimension of our life is not separate from meditation, and it's not separate from insight. It's like our ethics are the manifestation, the expression of our understanding. You know, if I say I, you know, many of us have noticed that there can be a gap between how I think I ought to be and then what I'm doing. And that's a very interesting place to practice and to see what, you know, what is that about? And what I have seen in my own practice is the great support that getting interested in a kind of ethical life can be for meditation and for understanding. So it's really one is the expression of the other. So there are five precepts that we traditionally take. Not to kill, you know, to harm life. Not to steal, not to take what's not given. Not to lie, you know, to honor the truth. Not to... Who knows?
Sex.
This is a big one, which I conveniently forgot. Not to misuse sexuality. Not to, you know, not to harm others with our sexuality. Traditionally, on retreat, we take the vow of celibacy. So it's like not intentionally engaging in sexual activity. And this is a very, very interesting practice, you know. When we've made that decision, like I'm not going to act on sexual feelings or sexual thoughts, we get to a front row seat for how these energies work in us. How do they move through us? How do they stimulate thoughts and feelings? And it can give us so much freedom to see that a thought about desire or sexual fantasy or something, to just watch it and to watch it arise and to watch it do its thing and then to watch it end, to watch it dissolve. And it always ends, you know, at some point. And it's like it can give us a lot of confidence, a lot of freedom that we're not repressing this. It's something that's bad, but we're not acting on it. We're not enacting it. We're not following it. We're not chasing it. And so it's kind of like the middle way. And we can learn a lot about ourselves. And then the fifth precept is not to intoxicate the mind. So not to take alcohol, recreational drugs, something like this. Because it's what we're really doing here is cultivating clarity, cultivating this ability to see clearly. And it's almost like, sometimes I think drugs and alcohol are maybe not necessarily so bad in of themselves, but we use them. We use them to escape. We use them to avoid. And this is the practice of non-avoidance, of simply being willing to be present for what's happening. We may have ideas about what we think will happen this week. We may have expectations. We may have a little sense of heaviness, of this should happen. I hope this happens, or I hope this doesn't happen, or something. But as much as possible to be here moment to moment to moment, it's like this shift from being in the world of our ideas and our expectations to this returning the light, returning the awareness to this body, this mind. And so the clarity of that, these precepts, these ethical precepts, are, some people say that we don't really need to talk about them because when we're practicing, we're natural expression of who we are comes out as these precepts. But it's helpful to name them. It's helpful to put them into words and just to honor the safety, the field of safety that they create for all of us. So, so our tradition is to chant the refuges for Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and we'll do that in Pali, which is the kind of ancient Buddhist language, in a kind of call and response way. And so you just repeat after me for those who would like to. And then for the precepts, we'll say them in English, and you can repeat them after me. So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama.
Sama.
Sambuddhassa.
Sambuddhassa.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi.
Dutiyampi.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi.
Dutiyampi.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi.
Dutiyampi.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi.
Tatiyampi.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi.
Tatiyampi.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi.
Tatiyampi.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam.
So we're on our way, and sometimes helpful for the very first night of retreat to, as Gil said, be gracious and be gentle with ourselves. Often we've traveled quite a bit, quite a far ways to be here. So to have a good night's sleep, you know, to take care of yourself. The hall here is open. If you'd like to do some night sitting, and we'll see you in the morning. So sweet dreams.